Charlene did not exist before this episode. What they are about to describe is happening across Yorkshire and the Humber as you listen. This is their story. In one of the most deprived constituencies in the country, trained healthcare workers cannot find employment while hospital wards remain short-staffed, and people ready to train as nurses are turned away from courses that have the space and equipment to teach them. The buildings exist, the teachers exist, the need exists, but the connection between them has been severed by decisions made in Westminster.
I grew up on the Parson Cross estate in Sheffield, watching my mum come home exhausted from 12-hour shifts as a care assistant. She would collapse on the sofa, still wearing her uniform, too tired to change, and I would make her a cup of tea and listen to her stories about the residents. There was Mrs. Henderson, who forgot her own children's names, but could recite every word of hymns from 60 years ago. There was Mr. Walsh, who got agitated every evening looking for his wife, not remembering she had died 5 years earlier. Mum never spoke about these people like they were problems to be managed. She talked about them like they were her neighbours, which they were. After struggling through my GCSEs, I started volunteering at a dementia day centre near our estate. The first time, an elderly man called George grabbed my hand and asked me to help him find his way home. Even though he was sitting in his usual chair, I understood what my mum had been doing all those years. It was not just about washing and feeding and making sure people took their medication. It was about holding on to their dignity when they could not hold on to it themselves. I had found what I wanted to do with my life. I completed my health and social care diploma at Sheffield College and worked as a healthcare assistant for 3 years at Sheffield Teaching Hospitals, NHS Foundation Trust. But I wanted to do more. I wanted to be the person who could make decisions about pain relief, who could spot the early signs of infection, who could explain to families what was happening to their loved ones. I wanted to be a nurse. In 2021, I applied to Sheffield Hallam University's nursing programme and was accepted. I remember the day the letter arrived, how I sat in our kitchen reading it 3 times before I believed it was real. My mum cried when I told her. She had always wanted to train as a nurse herself, but never had the chance. This felt like both of us achieving something we had dreamed about. 2 weeks before the course was meant to start, I received a phone call that changed everything. A woman from the university admissions office told me my place had been withdrawn due to reduced health education, England funding allocations for Yorkshire and the Humber. She sounded genuinely sorry, but she said there was nothing they could do. The money was not there. I contacted Health Education England directly to understand what had happened. A man named David Morehouse explained that the Treasury had capped their budget and they simply could not fund additional training places, despite what he called high vacancy rates across the region. He made it sound reasonable, like a household that had to choose between paying the electric bill and buying groceries. The money had run out. These things happened. I accepted it because everyone else seemed to accept it. I took a job as a healthcare assistant at Sheffield Teaching Hospitals while I waited to reapply. Every shift, I worked alongside qualified nurses who were stretched beyond their limits. Sarah, one of the senior nurses on the ward, told me they had 17 nursing vacancies they could not fill. 17. She was working 6 day weeks because they could not find enough staff. The irony was not lost on me. I was desperate to train for a job that desperately needed doing, but somewhere between my willingness and their need, the system had broken down. In 2022, I applied again. The same thing happened. Another phone call, another apology, another explanation about reduced funding allocations. This time, I asked more questions. How many places had been cut? How many people, like me, were being turned away. The answers were vague. Budget constraints, they said. Difficult decisions. The woman on the phone kept using the phrase, "There is no money," as though it explained everything. That is when I started to notice things that did not fit the story I was being told. Walking past Sheffield Hallam's nursing building one afternoon, I looked up and saw that entire floors were dark. No lights, no movement, nothing. I asked a security guard what was happening up there. He told me the training labs on the third and fourth floors had been mothballed for 2 years, with all the equipment still there. Simulation mannequins were thousands of pounds, hospital beds, monitoring equipment, all of it just sitting empty. I also discovered something else that made no sense. My neighbour, Pauline, mentioned that her daughter Claire had qualified as a nurse 2 years ago, but could not find work. When I started asking around our estate, I found 11 other people in the same situation. 12 qualified nurses, all living within a mile of each other, all unable to get jobs. Meanwhile, the hospital where I worked had 17 nursing vacancies. The pieces did not fit together. The training labs existed. The equipment existed. The teachers existed. I had met some of them at an open day. The people who wanted to train existed. I was one of them. The qualified nurses who wanted to work existed. They lived on my street. The jobs existed. I saw the vacant posts every day. So what exactly was it that there was no money for? I started to understand that the government that issues the pound had chosen not to spend the pounds that would connect these people to this work. It was not that the money had disappeared or that the country had gone broke. It was that someone in Westminster had decided that training nurses was not worth the expense. Even while wards remained understaffed and people like me were turned away from courses with empty seats, I used to accept the excuse that there was no money. I hear it differently now. The government that prints the notes and mints the coins told me it could not find enough of them to train the people who were standing right there, ready to work. The real question was never about money. It was about whether the people existed, whether the skills could be taught, whether the equipment was available. They were. All of them. The excuse was not a fact. It was a choice, wrapped in the language of impossibility. It is the same logic as a household that says we cannot afford it, except a household does not issue its own currency. The government does. The limit was never the money. The limit was the willingness to spend it into the places and the people who needed it. I am still here, still watching, still working as a healthcare assistant while qualified nurses burn out around me. But I understand now that what happened to me is not just my story. It is the story of every constituency where people and needs exist side by side while someone in Westminster says the cupboard is bare.
What Charlene experienced has a name: fake experts. This technique relies on citing economists or commentators who treat government spending like a household budget, as though repeating this analogy makes it true. Think of how tobacco companies once paraded scientists who insisted smoking was harmless, selecting only those whose conclusions supported their agenda while ignoring the overwhelming evidence of harm. The fake experts were real scientists, but they were chosen specifically because they would say what the industry needed to hear. In Charlene's story, every time officials said there is no money, they were quoting unnamed economists who supposedly proved that government budgets work like household budgets. When Charlene was told training places had to be cut due to Treasury spending limits, she was hearing the output of an economic establishment that treats public investment as a cost to be minimized, rather than as the means by which trained nurses reach the wards that need them. The objection economists say we cannot spend more on health without causing inflation is a perfect example. which economists. The profession is divided. Many macroeconomists argue the binding constraint is real capacity, not currency. Economists say without naming them is an appeal to unnamed authority. The UK government issues its own currency. It does not need to find pounds before it spends them. The real constraint is resources. People, skills, materials, time. And in Charlene's constituency, those resources were sitting idle. The training labs were empty, the equipment was mothballed, the qualified nurses were unemployed, and the hospital had 17 unfilled vacancies. The resources existed, the people existed. The decision not to connect them was political, not financial. Sheffield, Brightside and Hillsborough ranked out of 543 English constituencies on the English Indices of Deprivation 2025, placing it in deprivation decile. 1. The constituency has 110 registered charities according to the Charity Commission Register for England and Wales. Total grants received amount to £860,000 according to 360 giving Grant Navo. All sources are published at blockedbritain.co.uk. Blocked Britain tells the stories of people whose lives are shaped by the gap between what Britain needs and what its institutions choose to provide. Every character is fictional. Every situation is drawn from official statistics, produced by Blocked Britain.